This is the Best of Game Time podcast. Highlights of today's 1620 The Zone's Game Time in bite-sized pieces. Hear Nick's entire past show on 1620thezone.com's Game Time podcast page and live 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. weekdays on 1620 The Zone, the 1620 The Zone app, and 1620thezone.com.
Hey guys, thanks for downloading the Best Up Podcast. In today's episode, put a bow and look back on the Mike Riley era, three seasons, 36 games, and some of the mistakes that I think Mike Riley made. Also, of course, talk a ton of Scott Frost today and an amazing interview with Ryan Bass. He's the sports director at CBS in Tampa. He's covered Central Florida for 10 years. He had a lot of very, very insightful, interesting things on Scott Frost, plus my take on the fiasco at Tennessee. Enjoy the podcast. We have to start the conversation today with somewhat kind of putting a bow on Mike Riley. Three seasons, 36 games, and this weekend, the Mike Riley era is officially done. I'll never forget where I was when I heard the news that Sean Eichhorst hired Mike Riley. I was sitting right here in this chair, live on the air, getting ready to bring on Jason Peter for an interview. And I was totally stunned, beyond shocked. Remember, there had been a couple of days that led up to the hiring, and in silly season, Everybody and their mom gets named rumored to a job, right? Like, there had to have been 20 to 25 names listed as potential Nebraska football candidates. You know what one name was never mentioned? Mike Riley, who was end up being the hire. So I was beyond shocked. Not gonna lie, I didn't like the hire. But I, like most of you, gave the hire a chance. Because you have to, kind of in life, right? But it never ever seemed to work. It never seemed like the right fit to me at all. And when you think about Mike Riley, there were two prevailing statements about Mike Riley when he arrived. He's the nicest coach in college football, the nicest guy in college football. And the other one was, he's a 500 coach. Those were the two things you heard over and over and over and over. And here we are in the wake of Riley's firing. And I tell you what, Mike Riley lived up to the billing on both. Mike Riley is an amazingly nice man. And guess what Mike Riley's final record ended up being at Nebraska? 19-19, 500. I just felt like the idea that you are what you are for your entire career, and all of a sudden you're going to go from being a 500 coach with no championships to changing sceneries, and all of a sudden you're winning 11 games and winning championships when you're over 60 years old. That all seemed far-fetched to me at the time. But that was the school of thought to a certain extent. Hey, you know, take a 500 coach in Corvallis, Oregon with no resources, give Nebraska's resources, and he'll win 10, 11 games and conference titles. I always found that school of thought and that sentiment to be extremely misguided. Because ultimately, the greatest predictor for future success is what? Previous success. And Mike Riley was severely lacking in that area. But I felt like you got to give something a chance, right? You can't just 100% make your mind up heading in and be totally stuck there mentally. You can't do that. I sincerely gave Mike Riley a chance. Now, that doesn't mean I didn't have doubts in my mind throughout the entire time. And the signs were there to me from the start that this thing was not probably going to work. And there were certainly mistakes on Riley's part along the way as well. When I look back, and you know, we'll be able to probably do this at a higher level as the years go by, because you can kind of see things clear, you get clarity, you're able to find out different things. But as I look back on these 36 games, these three seasons, I see three mistakes that ultimately doomed Riley. Number one, instead of square peg, round hole with Tommy Armstrong for 2 years, I think it would have behooved Riley, and I think he probably needed to get his style and system in place immediately, which means he probably would have had to go get a new quarterback right away. And I understand that that probably wouldn't have gone over well, but keep in mind, the team didn't even vote Tommy Armstrong captain. That tells you that they didn't necessarily view him in the light that we all thought you would view a 3-4 year starting quarterback. I just feel like I've now seen two different head coaches come into Nebraska, and Callahan and Mike Riley, and have the wrong fit at quarterback and tried to make it work, and it just stunted the progress of everything. Joe Daly with Bill Callahan and Tommy Armstrong with Mike Riley. I think getting your offensive system in place ASAP is crucial. But most importantly, getting the right quarterback in place from a style standpoint ASAP is crucial. Now, hindsight's always 20/20, but I always joke that Mike Riley had a folder in his office the first 2 years on his desk named Official Offensive System. And it was ready to be opened and installed, but they couldn't do it for the first 2 years because of Tommy Armstrong and his skill set not fitting what was in that folder. A part of the whole, it feels like year one, even though it's year three, you heard from Mike Riley, is because of this. That's my two cents on it. The other mistake, we all know it, firing Mark Banker and hiring Bob Diaco. That leads me to the other side of, boy, it just feels like year one, even though it's year three comment. Heading into year three, Mike Riley made a terrible decision to fire his defensive coordinator and make a total change in scheme from a 4-3 to a 3-4. I didn't like the move at the time, but I certainly didn't anticipate this level of a train wreck. Got to remember, Mark Banker's defense had improved dramatically in year two. Was almost a top 30 scoring defense, or total defense thing. And if you go back and look at that 2016 season, the defense carried the team to a 9-win season. And undergoing a massive shift to a new scheme with players who don't fit, when you were at the point in your tenure where you can't afford regression or a step back in any area, felt like a horrible move on Mike Riley's part. And to compound all of that, Bob Diaco's personality wasn't a good mix for the entire situation, that entire locker room. So not only was it a bad fit on the field with results, I think it impacted everything off the field as well. I think this mistake was ultimately probably the biggest one Mike Riley made. And the third one's kind of tough to discuss, but I think it has to do with the offensive line and sticking with Mike Kavanaugh as the offensive line coach. Because, listen, we can talk about quarterback fitting the system and 4-3 to 3-4 and all day. But oftentimes, your team, your program, and your tenure at a school is only as good as your offensive line, especially in the Big Ten. And Nebraska, for 3 years, had below-average offensive line play. And I don't know who else to peg that on other than Mike Kavanaugh. He's the offensive line coach. That group didn't improve at all. And you could argue that they regressed. That offensive line was playing its worst football in year three. And there is no excuse for that at all. So maybe you can say hiring Kavanaugh was a mistake right away, but maybe you can say that sticking with him was a mistake too. Either way, that offensive line just never developed and performed. And that is an issue that plagued a large role in everything ultimately failing in the Mike Riley era. So those three things jump out at me as kind of the big mistakes. 402-951-1620. Before we go to break, I will say this. We played some of Mike Riley's comments in that open. And Mike Riley speaking after he was fired is pretty amazing, man. The fact that even in that moment, I mean, what was it, like 2 hours after he'd been fired, he was thankful and wanted to relay that message to everyone is pretty damn cool.
I always think in terms of the people that are around me, family, coaching staff, team. And so I wanted to represent that group one more time and basically give my message to them that I love them and appreciate all the support and work through the time that we've been here.
I'm always looking at things and thinking about, hey, man, what can I learn from them or from that? The main thing I learned from Mike Riley is that class, maturity, respect, and being just nice can go a long way in life, man. Throughout the craziness of the past season, you know who the most calm person in the entire state of Nebraska was? It's Mike Riley. His ability to maintain a level of class and maturity and always treating people nicely with respect was just flat out remarkable to watch. And it was inspiring in some ways. Think about the fact that the guy was fired and wanted to talk to the media to express how thankful he was for his time here. Amazing. His struggles on the field are well documented, but we can all learn a thing or two about how to handle yourself in tough situations and how to treat people from Mike Riley. When you take a step back and you think about it, all signs right now point to Frost in Nebraska. I think everything Bill Moose has said points to Frost. He likes the Oregon offense. That's Frost. He ranted and raved about Frost on my show and on and on. And when you combine all that with the Nebraska job opening up, with the Florida job being filled, Frost not being rumored for any other job, and then even this morning, if you missed it, when Frost was asked point blank straight up if he could confirm on a teleconference he'd be back coaching Central Florida in 2018, he, of course, skated around it by saying, quote, "All I want to talk about is this football team. I've said multiple times these guys have done everything I've asked of them, and my focus is on this football team." You know, that again, if he wanted to minimize that distraction, if he was staying in Central Florida, you would think he would have squashed some of the Nebraska rumors by now, but he hasn't. And so I think all signs right now are pointing to Scott Frost coming back to Nebraska. At this point, I would probably be classified as I always hate to throw we throw the word shocked, but I'd be pretty stunned if we weren't talking about Scott Frost being the head coach next week. And you know, I think Scott Frost a lot of ways, he's not the only coach that can bring Nebraska back, but I think he's the best option and the perfect coach right now to lead Nebraska. One of the things Bill Moose referenced in his press conference was a fractured fan base and how that is concerning to him. He talked about the just being concerned about the fan base not being totally on the same page. I think Frost would. I don't think there's any other person on earth that would heal that more than Frost. I think Scott Frost would unite the fan base and bring about the necessary amount of patience needed to get this thing back rolling. Also, Nebraska would be getting the hot coach. I mean, just say it out loud. If Nebraska would get Frost, Florida, Tennessee, all these different people are open, and Frost chose Nebraska. Frost coming to Nebraska would add a level of wow and attention to the program, which is always good. There's no hotter coaching candidate right now than Scott Frost, and I think Nebraska's going to get him. So there are numerous intangible boosts that Nebraska will get with Frost. He's going to unite the fans. He's going to bring about the maximum amount of patience from the fans, and Nebraska gets the hot coach. And then the tangible things have been well documented. I mean, we've talked about, it's pretty amazing when you say out loud all the coaches that Scott Frost has either been coached by or coached under. Bill Walsh, Tom Osborne, Bill Parcells, Bill Belichick, Chip Kelly, John Gruden. I mean, it's like basically a who's who of great football minds of the past 25 years. He's been on both sides of the ball, defense and offense. He's been a position coach, been an offensive coordinator, now a head coach. He's won a national title as a player and a conference title as a player. He's won numerous conference titles as a coach. Plus, what he's doing in a short amount of time at Central Florida is nothing short of impressive. Again, he took over a program that was 0-12, and in year two, they're undefeated on the brink of winning a conference championship. I saw an amazing tweet this weekend that I had to retweet. Scott Frost, there are 51 players on Central Florida's roster that both experienced a winless season and an undefeated regular season. Like, that's amazing. That's amazing. But what I like most about Frost and Nebraska is it's a couple. I think he'll be able to bring a unique identity to Nebraska. I think Scott Frost is going to combine that new age Chip Kelly style of offense with also his knowledge and understanding of Nebraska, the Midwest, and what flourishes in this part of the country. Because you think about, like, Nebraska beyond just running the ball and stopping the run in the 90s, Nebraska was always different because they were unique. They were different. They were cutting edge. They found an edge, a weight room. They were the ones that were on the cutting edge of everything. And I think Scott Frost is going to be able to capture that in his own way in 2017. And that's what Nebraska needs. They need a guy that both understands the meat and potatoes of Nebraska and the Midwest, but also understands the need for being different in a good way, thinking outside the box. Plus, personality-wise, I think he's a perfect fit for Nebraska. He's young, which is good. I think Nebraska needs to get younger. And if you think about the past two coaches, Nebraska's kind of had like extremes both ways from a personality standpoint with the last two coaches. Bo Pelini, way too intense, way too emotional. Mike Riley, probably maybe a little too laid back, maybe a little too nice with his players. And you feel like Scott Frost is somewhere in the middle. He's kind of got a calming presence to him, but there's no question that guy commands respect at the same time. He's just the total package. He's the total package. Man, this stuff gives me goosebumps, dude, talking about Frost. Like, that. Just envisioning that dude truthfully coming back. Stuff gives me goosebumps. So at this point, with the dominoes that have fallen and where things are trending, at this point, I think I'd be pretty shocked if it's not Frost in a week. Right? I mean, come on. Turns down Florida. When asked to confirm that he'll be back coaching Central Florida, he skirts around that. I think we're at the point where carrying on this what if would be silly. If he's going to stay at Central Florida, you would think that that would be announced. He would squash those rumors in the distractions as they're heading into a conference title week. Just think there are a lot of different things about a lot. All signs point to Frost, and when you think about Scott Frost, the coach, I think he checks a lot of boxes, man. Todd says, Nick, you're talking about what Frost would do on offense. Literally gave me chills throughout my body. Me too, man. Me too. I mean, just thinking about it gets me so fired up. Gets me so freaking fired up. All right, well, let's bring on our next guest as the topic du jour of the day is Scott Frost, and let's get the Central Florida side of things. Ryan Bass. He's the sports director of CBS Tampa. He's covered Central Florida for over 10 years, and he joins us now. Ryan, first of all, how are you?
I'm good, man. I mean, I've had the last 2 days off, but I feel like I've worked every second of it. This has been a crazy 24 hours in college football, hasn't it, boy?
Oh, my gosh. Doing a sports talk show, Ryan, I came in today, and I looked at all that I had to cover, and I was like, I have no prayer of fitting this into 3 hours. None.
I'll tell you what.
Brutal.
today is a day where you could host a 24-hour radio show and just have at it. It is awesome. This is why we love college football, guys. This is amazing.
It is. All right, let's get into – you tweeted out some of Scott Frost's quotes. And even today on a teleconference, he was asked if he would confirm that he's going to be back in 2018. And, of course, he kind of skated around that answer. Your takeaway, one of your tweets was Scott Frost strikes you as a guy with one foot out the door. I guess, Ryan, why do you feel that way based on what you've heard today?
Well, look, guys, I will address his comments in the press conference in just a moment. But everything that I've heard from all of my sources within the program, Scott Frost, as many of you know, from the state of Nebraska, he's a very, very quiet guy. He keeps things very close to the vest. He doesn't let a lot of things out. But this has just steamrolled, and it has been hard to contain all of what's been coming out. Look, I know when there's smoke, there's fire, and sometimes people can jump the gun. But guys, there's a lot of truth to these rumors right now. Scott Frost and his staff, a lot of his staffers close to him, are preparing for a move. That is what I was told as early as this morning, that some of his staffers have cleaned out their desks at UCF. They're finalizing some paperwork that they've had to get done, and it seems as if it is imminent that Scott Frost is going to be leaving UCF. Now, I have not heard that from Frost mouth. I have not heard that from anyone exactly close to Scott Frost, but I will tell you, UCF people are certainly preparing for Frost's exit. There is already a list of candidates that is being put together and vetted for UCF in the event that Frost leaves. They did make a last-ditch effort yesterday to try and keep Scott Frost, but I think Danny White is coming to the conclusion that that it's going to be very hard to keep Scott Frost, especially with what's going on with Nebraska. His quote today in the press conference, I'm going to read it verbatim. This was the first question he was asked about the Nebraska job and the coaching rumors. He said, every year in college football, there's tough decisions to make. Those kind of things happen. When the time's right, we'll make them. I know it would be really hard to leave this team because of how much love I have for this group of guys. That's a direct quote from Frost today at his press conference that just ended moments ago. Guys, that sounds to me like a guy with one foot out the door. He was also asked about Nebraska and the interest. He said he would be upset if his alma mater wasn't interested in him, given his ties there and UCF's undefeated season. That to me, guys, I mean, you read those two quotes, that sounds to me like a guy that is headed for Lincoln.
No doubt about it. Ryan Bass, sports director, CBS Tampa. This is fantastic. Because my take all along, on top of the quotes that you're saying, my take all along was, especially now with the Florida job being filled and all that stuff, if in fact Frost was going to stay at Central Florida, wouldn't now be the perfect time to announce that, to clear all the drama and the rumors and the speculation and the questions when you're getting ready to play in a conference title game? I mean, that's the other thing to me is I look at the dominoes that are following and the lack of a commitment that he's going to stay at Central Florida, seemingly saying, this seems like a guy that's at the very least not going to be in Orlando next year.
Guys, we know how this goes, right? I mean, we're not strangers to how coaching changes operate in college football. I mean, I covered Willie Taggart's departure from USF last year, and you heard many of these same things. When he was at USF and they were getting ready to finish off the season against UCF and head into the Birmingham Bowl, you heard him say, I love this team. It'd be very hard to leave. And then what happens? He left for the Oregon job. It's very similar to what's happening now at UCF. UCF signed athletic director Danny White to a 5-year contract extension last week in the hopes that that would ease Scott Frost's concerns a little bit, that White would be going anywhere, and maybe with an inkling of that would sway Frost and say, okay, we're committed, we hope you are as well. He has had an extension on the table. Scott Frost has had an extension from UCF on the table for the last 3 weeks. Now, granted, he's had a baby in that time.
Yeah.
His team, is undefeated. They just beat USF in a nationally televised game. He's been busy, to say the least. But he has had an extension on the table the last 3 weeks that would have paid him, up to $5 million the last couple of years of his deal, the last 2-3 years of this deal. So, Frost has had that on his table, and he hasn't signed it. I've also been told that his agent has not had discussions with UCF's athletic director since that extension was offered. So, guys, look, there's just so much smoke here. It's hard to believe that Frost, after Saturday's game, goes, I'm going to stay at UCF.
Right.
I mean, you guys know as well as I do, he has a love and an affinity for his alma mater. He's always called it a dream job. The job's open. He's accomplished all that he certainly can at UCF. The best time to leave is now.
Ryan Bass, he's a sports director at CBS Tampa. He's also covered Central Florida for 10 years. We're talking Scott Frost here. By the way, up until kind of like the last couple of weeks, was the consensus and general thought that he was going to stay? Would you say that was the prevailing sentiment?
Here's what I thought. I was actually interviewed, on one of the radio stations in your area probably about a month ago. Okay. And I had said that I think it's between UCF and Florida. And Florida did reach out. They did their due diligence. They wanted Frost. They offered him the job. He declined it and turned it down. I never thought that would have been possible. Guys, I'm sitting here shocked when I heard yesterday morning and I got a call saying that Frost turned down the Florida job, because to me that seemed like a perfect fit. Mm-hmm. But Frost is also a different guy. And I think that's what a lot of people don't understand. He's not your typical college coach. He's very, very smart. He's somebody who takes a lot of time and thought, into the decisions that he makes. He's very calculated in everything that he does. And I think he saw Florida maybe as a job that he maybe just didn't want to get into at this point in time, with the mess that's up there in Gainesville right now. That's not something I've heard from a source. That's just me, based off my thoughts. But, I will tell you this. Once he turned down that Florida job, you don't turn down an SEC job, a top five, top eight job in the country, if you don't have something else on the table. And that is what led me to believe that there is a serious tie here to Nebraska and that these rumors have some serious legs. Because, again, that is one of the best jobs in America, and you just don't tell the Gators, no, I don't want it, if there isn't something else lined up.
Ryan, help us out here. Just how remarkable has this two-year run been? Because it's interesting, some people go, yeah, they were 0-12, but it's not like they had never had success. Obviously, Blake Bortles a couple years ago. Like, think back to that 0-12 team, and now think about this football team this year. Try and describe the job that Frost has done in just two seasons.
Astronomical. He even said it today in his press conference that, we righted the ship, and I never thought that it would be this quick to turn this thing around. I mean, look, I will say this. That 0-12 team, it's a little bit, deceiving. I mean, they had a lot of talent on that team, guys, but as the wheels fell off, they fell off quick. And the team just basically tuned out, head coach George O'Leary, who'd been there for years. So there's a lot of seniors on this year's team that were on that 0-12 team. And they'll tell you the same thing. There was a lot of talent there, but the wheels fell off and they just could never recover. Frost has done an unbelievable job, and it all starts with recruiting. He's brought in guys that fit his system. And last year you saw, some of those freshmen play, but the offense just wasn't there yet. Guys were still learning the playbook. Mackenzie Milton was a true freshman and making mistakes. They had some offensive skill players, but they just couldn't tie it all together. The defense was the leader of that team last year, and Eric Chenander, who likely will be Scott's defensive coordinator, if he's not offered the head coaching job at UCF in Lincoln, Nebraska, Chenander did a wonderful job. But this season is what really defines it for Scott Frost. He took a team that had a lot of promise and that had a lot of potential and basically inserted this offensive genius into them. He recruited an amazing skill set of players. I mean, look at most of the players that are contributing right now for UCF and that are really one of the main reasons why they're undefeated right now. You look at Adrian Killens, you look at Otis Anderson, you look at Dredrick Snelson, and I know these are guys maybe that aren't familiar to Nebraska people, but Mackenzie Milton, Gabe Davis, these are all guys that are either freshmen or sophomores that Frost and his staff recruited that are the reason why this team is undefeated this year. So Frost, I cannot begin to tell you the kind of job he did in Orlando. Granted, it is much easier to recruit in Orlando and to get a high profile and high caliber athlete to UCF than, would be for some other places, but Frost has done an unbelievable job, and I will always remember this season, maybe even more than I will the 2013 season when UCF won the Fiesta Bowl over Baylor, because it has just been that special.
Ryan Bass, he's the sports director of CBS Tampa, covered Central Florida for over 10 years, dropping knowledge on the very latest with Scott Frost and the potential coaching rumors as it pertains to Frost, where he's going to head next. Scott, Ryan, this was amazing, man. Great insight, great stuff. We really appreciate it.
Well, guys, I really appreciate you having me on, and I'm sure this might be the last time. But, guys, if you guys get Scott Frost, I know certainly everybody there in Nebraska knows this already, but please enjoy him. He is such a pleasure to be around, to watch, to listen to. I it's certainly sad to see him go if, in fact, he does leave UCF. He's been a national treasure, guys, and I'm sure he will turn things around rather quickly in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Ryan Bass, great stuff, Ryan. Appreciate your time, my man.
All right, have a good one.
Yes!
For Scott Frost.
It's where we're at right now. The waiting's the hardest part, people. Let Petty tell you. Let Petty tell you. That's where everybody's at right now. If you missed it, we've tweeted out interview with Ryan Bass, CBS Sports Director in Tampa. Dropped some knowledge on the Central Florida side of things that... Yeah, you get the sense from him that it's a foregone conclusion that Frost will be leaving Central Florida. And you'd assume that he's going to be headed to a place whose area code is 402.
Where's that?
That is Nebraska. What's the hardest part, Tom? Scott Frost today, when asked about Nebraska, he said, quote, I'd be hurt if Nebraska wasn't interested in me. Come on now, people. It's not that hard to connect some of these dots.
Chances that Bill Moose is sitting in his office
listening
to this song right now as we speak. He's got it on a loop.
He's just crushing. There's Runza rappers
he likes
everywhere.
Him. He likes some Runza, man.
He didn't have one, but he had two. Yeah, he didn't have one, but he had two.
Sitting there, the run. On the way. On our part. Cabbage.
I mean, this is. Do we need to let Tom tell us one more time? Come on, guys. Come on, guys. All right, so we had a Tom Petty that situation.
I don't think we've ever played an entire song during a segment before.
That's that song. So
that's
good.
A first.
That song's so good. You might have to get the John Wilkes and lay down some things for that one.
Too soon, man.
Hashtag too soon?
Too soon.
Yeah, you're right. You're totally right.
Still a little sore.
This is a good tweet from Joel Klatt, too. So the, Tennessee, there's disasters and then there's Tennessee. And with everything that shook out yesterday with Greg Schiano, this is a great tweet from Joel Klatt. He said, Tennessee is now having to focus on coaches with Tennessee ties because no one else will touch that job with a 10-foot pole. You were led by emotional hypocrites with a severe lack of football knowledge that incited an internet mob. You made your bed, now go sleep. That's from Joel Klatt. And you start to think about who's going to take that job, who's going to want to come to Knoxville, Tennessee after what took place yesterday. I don't know. And beyond all that, I was saying last week with all of the different things that with all the different jobs that are opening up and all it is, there's going to be a lot of disappointed. I even thought before things went south yesterday with Greg Schiano that I always thought Tennessee was going to be the one school that was going to be left kind of without their top five choice, for lack of a better term. But man, that very interesting. And now seeing what's going to happen there. Let's grab a couple calls. I might have to talk about what stands in the way of Frost in Nebraska tomorrow. Let's grab Monty. What's up, Monty?
Hey, Nick. Hey. How's it going?
Man, it's going great. How are you?
Okay, I have two questions. I have, one major question.
All right.
Everybody wants to think Scott Frost is coming to Nebraska, okay? I want to drink the Kool-Aid, too, and think that he's coming. Why don't Scott Frost just come out and announce that he's coming home?
Because he's got one more game to coach.
Well, okay. Now, Bo Pelini. Okay, now let's go back. Let's go back. Bo Pelini had a season to finish out when he was coaching. He had a bowl game to coach.
Yep.
But Bo Pelini came out and announced right away, hey, I'm coming to Nebraska.
It's different when you're a head coach compared to a coordinator, though, Monty. It's different.
Okay.
Yeah, it's different.
Thanks.
It's different. It's different. You got another question, or you go, okay, Monty, he was good. He hung up emphatically. That was good. Scott, I can only assume this isn't Scott Frost, but Scott wants to talk.
I'm heading north, everybody.
All right, nice. There, we heard it. We got breaking news. Breaking news.
Hey, that was good, Nick. Nick, I know it's all said and done. We're all ready to move forward, but
sure.
The way that whole divorce happened yesterday with the press conferences, that was about as nice as that whole thing could have just played out and been communicated. So, hey, I applaud them and
I agree
for stepping up and doing the. I mean, how many guys would do that? I don't know if I've ever seen that.
Yeah, I know it was pretty amazing for a guy to get let go and then an hour and a half, 2 hours later, want to go speak to the media and say how thankful he was. It was amazing, right? It was amazing.
Yeah. Hey, the other thing I wanted to ask Nick is after reading that article in the Herald yesterday. And we had all heard about how dysfunctional things were under Knucklehead Eichhorst. Do you think if Riley spends his 3 years under Moose, that things could have turned out differently?
Interesting. Scott, I appreciate the phone call. I don't know. You felt like there were a lot of different situations even beyond Mike Riley that made this situation tough. But I also don't want to let Mike Riley off the hook as he's the head coach. You know, we can peg a lot of stuff, and certainly Eichhorst sounds like a guy that was meddling and all that stuff. But I also don't want to just let Mike Riley off the hook. Mike Riley's a grown man, and the buck stops with him. And you can say all this stuff. Well, he was forced to fire Banker and forced it. Well, you know, I mean, he's an adult. So I lean towards no. That I don't think anything would have been different. But, you know, as I laid out earlier, there were a handful of things that I felt like went wrong. The biggest one, obviously, is the decision to get rid of Mark Banker and hire Bob Diaco. I said at the time, thought it was a bad decision. That defense had really improved in year two. That defense carried a team to 9 wins. And the idea that you were going to be able to bring in a strong, turns out a very polarizing, strong personality and be able to implement a brand new scheme, switching from the 4-3 to the 3-4 for players that haven't been recruited to run the 3-4, and you weren't going to see any regression, I felt like was incredibly naive. And not only did you see regression, you saw the worst Nebraska defense maybe ever when you look at various statistics. 402-951-1620. Hey, Braden, you're up next. Appreciate you calling.
Hey, Nick. Number one, this is the most fantastic show I've ever heard, by the way.
Good.
No, it's phenomenal. I love it. Anyway, just a quick story going on the Mike Riley thing. Saturday, I golfed with my boys out at Wilderness Ridge. And right after we get done golfing and we eat dinner, and guess who's sitting right next to us in the booth? Mike Riley. I go up there and I shake his hand. I tell him thankful. And you know what? He gave us a big old hug, took our picture. And
oh, that's great.
It was.
That's cool.
It was just pretty phenomenal.
That's cool.
How nice he was and how cool he was. And he wasn't upset. I mean, this is literally like 8 hours after his firing. So,
right.
Anyway. Yeah. Thanks, Nick.
That's
love
a great
show,
story. Thanks, Braden. Appreciate the phone call. That's a good story. You know, I said earlier, you know, I always like to watch things and think about what I could learn from it, whether it's people or whatever. And to me, Mike Riley, you learn the main thing I learned from Riley is class, maturity, respect, being nice. That goes a long ways, man. And to think of it in the midst of all the craziness over the past season, the most calm person was Riley. And his ability to maintain a level of class and maturity, always treating people with the utmost respect in his nice way, was remarkable to watch and inspiring some ways. You know, his struggles on the field, well documented, we've been all that, but it was an inspiration to watch a guy handle himself in a tough situation the way that Mike Riley did. And for him to go up to the podium and say that he was thankful and appreciative of the opportunity, pretty cool. Pretty darn cool. Outside of our little world in the state of Nebraska and Riley being fired and all this Frost rumor stuff, the biggest story in the sports world, without question, was what took place with Tennessee and Greg Schiano yesterday. Don't think I've ever seen anything. I haven't ever seen anything like that. I'm not sure we'll ever see anything like that again. So it's weird how sometimes Twitter becomes this like, it's like this alternate reality that doesn't necessarily spill into reality. But yesterday, it was almost like the Twitter mob morphed into reality and attacked one thing and got change. So the Vols, Tennessee, was set to hire Greg Schiano. The contract was signed. But the reaction and the revolt and the protest and the negative reaction from the fans was so loud. And not just the fans, there were politicians in the state. I mean, everybody. The reaction was so bad, so negative, so loud, so crazy that Tennessee then backed out of the agreement with Greg Schiano. I am going to be surprised to see what ends up happening with the contract. I mean, the contract was signed. What was the word? There's a memoriam of something or other for, I don't even know what that term is. But so what were the fans upset about? Okay, so some of the fans, and I'm going to get to what I think they were really upset about here in a little bit. But some of the fans were upset with the hiring of Greg Schiano because of the fact that Greg Schiano was alleged to have potentially seen something with Jerry Sandusky and a young boy when he was at Penn State and didn't say anything or stop it. But this was a secondhand story from another coach that Mike McQueary relayed in a hearing one time. This was the quote from McQueary. I can't remember if it was one night or one morning, but that Greg had come to his office and was white as a ghost and said he just saw Jerry doing something to a boy in the shower, and that's it. That's all Bradley, Coach Bradley, ever told me. That's it. No, there was not a follow-up. There was no investigation, no police report, no charges, no lawsuit. No witness ever came forward making a claim against Schiano. Nothing. That was it. A relayed secondhand story that was just, I can't remember if it was at the night or in the morning. And Bradley, all he told me was he came in and went like, that's it. It was never further investigated. And then, of course, Greg Schiano vehemently denied it. Come on, that story right there would never hold up in a court of law. But yet, that was the catalyst for Tennessee fans to revolt, paint a rock yesterday that Greg Schiano, what was it, support or covered up child rape or something like that. It was a scary scene around Tennessee yesterday. So much so that Tennessee decided to back out and not hire Greg Schiano, effectively probably tainting and potentially ruining Greg Schiano's reputation. And at the same time, Tennessee has made their football head coaching job about as unattractive as any. Congratulations, Tennessee. Congratulations. So listen, with what we're talking about, I don't know for a definitive fact what happened with Schiano and what he saw at Penn State. And you know what? Neither do you. Bottom line, nothing has ever pegged on him as to that story being legit in any way. Yet, people took it and painted him in a way that cost him his job and his reputation. What happened this weekend was a little scary in terms of what the Twitter mob is capable of. Facts be damned, let's just run with something and go crazy.
Did you read John Curry's statement?
Yeah, I just today. Bits and pieces of it. Yeah. I mean, it says,
quote, Coach Schiano worked at Penn State from 1990 to 1995. Consequently, we, of course, carefully reviewed the 2012 investigation report by Lewis Free. Coach Schiano is not mentioned in the Free report and was not one of the more than 400 people interviewed in the investigation. We also confirmed that Coach Schiano was never deposed and never asked to testify in any criminal or civil manner. And we confirmed with our colleagues at the Ohio State University who had conducted similar inquiry after the 2016 release of testimony. I know that Coach Schiano will continue to have great success in his coaching career and wish him and his family well. So essentially what he says right there is, we vetted him, we investigated this, we found nothing wrong with Coach Greg Schiano, but you, the fans, don't like him, so we're not going to hire him.
Yeah.
That's a horrible precedent to set.
What a
horrible,
spineless move from Tennessee. And what we're talking about, but here's the problem. In the court of public opinion, or in this case, the social media Twitter court, Greg Schiano has been, is guilty, charged, and like all of it. But here's the real crux of what my reaction to everything was. This is just obviously just my opinion. This is just my read on it. I think this was really about Tennessee fans being upset with Greg Schiano, the football coach, not Greg Schiano, the man. I don't think this had anything to do with, I shouldn't say anything, I don't think the main part of all this was about that as much as it was about, he's not a home run hire. Listen, if John Gruden was hired yesterday with the exact same backstory, I don't think any of what took place happens. Because the fans want Gruden. That's a hire they would have been happy with. So at the core of yesterday's negative reaction from Tennessee fans, the anger about the hiring of Greg Schiano was, to me, more about them not liking Schiano, the football coach, and wanting better than him than it was about an allegation of a secondhand story with him at Penn State. That's just my take on it. Either way, what unfolded yesterday was unbelievable. Unbelievable. And so, you start to think now, who the hell is going to take the Tennessee job? Who would want to take that job right now, where that's the climate? Yesterday and how that unfolded was one of the most amazing things you'll ever see. But it's just, it's yesterday struck me as really unfair to Greg Schiano. The Twitter mob cost Greg Schiano the Tennessee job and cost him his reputation. And what everything that they're what they're basing all that off of is pretty weak. Again, McQuarrie said, quote, I can't remember if it was one night or one morning, but that Greg had come into his office white as a ghost and said he saw Jerry doing something to a boy in a shower, and that's it. That's all Coach Bradley ever told me. Again, no follow-up questions, no police report, no investigation, no charges filed, no lawsuit seeking damages. In the 400 people, witnesses, different people in lawsuits, Greg Schiano isn't in it at all. Yet people painted a rock yesterday that Greg Schiano covered up child rape. Wow. Unbelievable.
Thank you for listening to today's Best of Game Time podcast. Hear Nick's entire past show on 1620thezone.com's Game Time podcast page and live 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. weekdays on 1620 The Zone, the 1620 The Zone app, and 1620thezone.com.